Welcome to Question Period. I'm Evan Sullivan. The barrage of attacks on the finance minister intensifies.
I am officially calling on Bill Morneau to resign as finance minister.
What's the real case against Bill Morneau? How much is substance and how much is just political rhetoric? We'll dig into the latest allegations. And then, China trade. With worries that free trade with the U.S. could be in jeopardy, should Canada kickstart a free trade deal with China? We'll speak with the Minister of International Trade about the dangers of espionage, security, and getting a good deal. Plus,
if war comes, make no mistake, the North Korean regime will be utterly destroyed.
Incoming, does Canada now need to change its defense program after North Korea launches an intercontinental ballistic missile? The former head of Canada's spy service, Dick Fadden, is here alongside the former defense minister, Peter MacKay, to talk about that. Plus, the scrum weighs in on what could be the worst or maybe the best political ad of the year. We'll show that to you. This is Question Period. Let's go get some answers. Attack, counterattack, and back again. Parliament's become a war fought over the finance minister's future. Should Bill Morneau resign?
Why won't the finance minister simply answer the question and reveal to Canadians what assets he has owned over the last 2 years?
Given all of this, how can the prime minister still have confidence in his finance minister? Here.
So the finance minister isn't competent and he can't follow the rules. Why is he still in cabinet?
The right honourable prime minister.
Speaker, I have full confidence in the Minister of Finance, and one only has to look at the 500,000 new jobs to understand why.
Now, it's got to the point where an outraged opposition MP was actually thrown out of the House.
Order. The honourable member for Banff Airdrie will come to order, or he can go outside or be helped outside. Which would he prefer? Which would he prefer? I ask the Sergeant-at-Arms to remove Mr. Richards.
Bill Morneau dismisses all these allegations of conflict of interest or insinuations of insider trading as dirty politics, possibly even as slander.
In taking on this role, of course I knew that there was the potential for personal attacks. I've got to say, though, that I had no idea how slanderous the opposition would be when they found themselves in a position where our plans were going well for Canadians.
So, is there any substance to the case against Bill Morneau, or is this just all raw politics? To find out, I'm now joined by Marco Mendocino. He's a Liberal MP from Ontario. Marilyn Gladue is a Conservative MP from the same province, and Kennedy Stewart is an NDP MP from British Columbia. Great to have all of you here.
Thanks.
Let's just start with you, Marilyn Gladue. Your leader has called for Bill Morneau to resign. What is the case against him? Why should he go?
There's multiple infractions, Evan. I mean, he started out not putting his shares in Morneau Chapelle in a blind trust, which is required by Parliament. You either have to sell them or put them in a blind trust. He didn't do that. Then he got charged by the Ethics Commissioner, $200 for failure to properly disclose his French villa. Then he is being investigated for putting a C-27 in a pension bill that will benefit his family. And now he refuses to answer questions about whether or not he sold shares on a certain day and what's in his other five holding companies.
Because there's substance and there's raw politics.
Yeah.
On the substance, the Ethics Commissioner didn't require him, this is what he keeps saying, to put it in a blind trust. Why is that a problem?
Look, these are the rules that are written. If you can't be trusted with the little things, you can't be trusted with $355 billion of Canadian taxpayer money.
All right. Glided right over.
Well,
bad day for the opposition this morning. They wake up to a tsunami of headlines which say that there is absolutely zero evidence of any of the ludicrous allegations they've been making over the last number of months. So let's go over the facts very quickly. He owned the shares. He sold the shares. He sold the shares before the announcement. The announcement was made very public. It was fully disclosed and debated by all parties, by the media. And the markets went up afterwards. They went down. It's neither here nor there because it was fully disclosed and taken.
But you're taken glossing.
He can't remember when he sold $10 million worth of stocks.
He can. He answered the question
very
directly.
Does that happen every day?
Why doesn't he give a date on that?
He's answered the question very directly.
Why doesn't he give a date?
He's given a very square answer
on
that.
But not a date. Why not? If it's so square, why not a date?
If he's as squeaky clean as he says, why doesn't he just say, yes,
given,
I did, or no, I didn't?
He has been very forthright in his answer, and here's the point.
No, he has not.
There's absolutely no correlation between the shares that were sold and the announcement, because the announcement was made fully public. And this is the problem with the opposition. They have been going around making false allegations. They've implicated the finance minister's father. They've implicated his wife. And Canadians are going to reject that because it debases politics.
Okay, but we should you're be debating, like it was
sorry,
the first
if I could
infraction.
Just finish. We should be debating big ideas. The economy is red hot. That's because of the finance minister. Unemployment is down. That's because of our policies.
Those are
and instead of doing
points.
That, the opposition have squandered the last
okay,
2 months,
well,
and Canadians will remember.
Right, let me bring in Kennedy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was
what's the
say,
case against him?
Well, I'd just like to take it back to the last parliament. So I've been here since 2011, and the last parliament we had something similar, something to start, this is starting to smell like that, which I think is the Mike Duffy.
Well,
we had day after day, we had somebody standing up, giving talking points, defending, not answering dates, not answering times, and look what that led to. And it really is starting to smell like that.
Okay, but does the NDP want the finance minister to resign?
We are still waiting for the ethics commissioner to come back with her final report, and we want to follow proper process on that.
Previous ministers have been forced to resign for spending $16 on an orange juice. So with
yours.
All of the infractions...
It was your party.
Well, whatever. When it's wrong, it's wrong. And this is not the first infraction. We're talking about... He's already been charged by the ethics commissioner.
Problem with
he's
that
not
argument
answering
is very
to Canadians.
Simple.
What happened
there
to openness
is not
and transparency?
So similar.
There is a problem with that argument, and that is there is no evidence whatsoever... And your viewers will know this.
If he's squeaky clean, why doesn't he answer the questions?
They understand what is a credible argument and what isn't.
Okay,
and there is zero credibility
before
to anything the opposition
just,
has said.
I mean, at risk of just injecting a few facts here.
Right.
The ethics commissioner is investigating him, so there's not nothing there. So that's
absolutely
going on. Can you, and Marilyn Glad raised a point, and I'd like your response. Maybe this goes back to what some call the original sin, why he didn't put this in a blind trust. I understand that he followed the advice of the ethics commissioner, but she openly said, I'm trying to close a loophole from back in 2013 to allow me to tell people like the finance minister to use a blind trust. The prime minister did it. Why didn't your finance minister follow the Trudeau rules and go beyond the letter of the law, the perception, and put it in a blind trust? Was that an error?
And look, let's have a responsible debate about that, like this government has done in the past.
Why didn't you have a
debate about legislation?
Answer the question, why didn't he put it in a blind trust?
Let's have a responsible debate about the standards that we hold our elected representatives to, like we have done in the past when it comes to fundraising. This government is not beyond raising the bar. In fact, I would argue that we have.
But why didn't he put it in a blind trust?
But what I'm saying to you is that when the finance minister sat down with the ethics commissioner, somebody who has the statutory responsibility to give all elected members advice, he followed it. If we want to revisit the standard, that's one thing. But to now call and say retroactively he needs to resign without a shred of evidence, is why the opposition are finding themselves in some real pain today.
Am I wrong that I read the mandate letter to the finance minister from the prime minister, and didn't they say you have to have no even perception
apparent
of a conflict?
No appearance of conflict, and that's what the law says in British Columbia. That's why our laws are tougher there, and that's what we should have here. So this is definitely an appearance of conflict. Nobody here would dispute that. There
absolutely
is an appearance of conflict
it's
here, and under other
and
acts,
a charge already
you would be
from
punished
the ethics
for that.
Commissioner.
Driven
you
by baseless allegations?
No,
it's the
ethics commissioner charged him.
Which debases the politics and the democracy that we cherish in that institution
but you have to
across
agree
the street.
This is the kind
we
of runaround non-answer.
Go ahead, Marilyn.
This is the kind of runaround non-answer we're getting from the finance minister, Bill Morneau, every day. If he's squeaky clean, let him answer the question. Yes, I sold the stocks on this day. No, I did not. Okay? He did not answer those questions in the House. He will not tell us what's in the other companies he has. He's been charged already by the Ethics Commissioner. We need to know, and Canadians need to know.
He's been very forthright about it.
So under a real act, which I think we should improve to, he would be guilty of an apparent conflict of interest. Now, you think even you would agree with that, I'm sure.
No, of course I wouldn't. Look, on the appearance note, you've got to look at the evidence. And you've got a number of very thoughtful commentary and opinions that have come out this morning that have said unequivocally zero.
No
absolute evidence.
Okay,
period.
Marco, you and I both know that your own MPs are coming forward. They're concerned about the pain that this is causing your government. And let me just go back to the mandate letter since your prime minister wrote it. In his mandate letter, he said, it's important that we acknowledge mistakes when we make them. Okay? You're saying he hasn't made any mistakes. If he hasn't made any mistakes, why has he sold those shares now? Why has he revisited this issue? Why has he gone back and donated to charity? If there was no mistakes, it seems to me he would have done nothing. Isn't this an admission that he's made a mistake?
It's not an admission of making a mistake so much as an admission that there has been an increased amount of public scrutiny, which has been driven by the insinuation and the baseless allegations, which have been driven by the opposition.
So you don't think he's done anything wrong? So he's done all this just on baseless
allegations? This is the problem. The liberals don't even understand what a conflict of interest is.
If I could just be permitted to finish the thought. All I am saying is that he's been responsive to that. He's been sensitive to that. But to then equate that sensitivity to saying that he should resign in the absence of any credible evidence is the problem with the conservatives. And they just don't learn,
Evan.
That's
a fair question. Have you called for resignation based on raw politics where there might be not enough substance to hit that threshold of resignation?
Absolutely not. There's multiple infractions here, and he's been charged by the ethics commissioner. He refuses to answer questions. He's not being open and transparent. Nobody can trust him anymore. How can you have him in charge of all of Canada's finances if you can't trust him?
Yeah, he's already been fined and disciplined once by the ethics commissioner, and I think that people sitting at home are going to say there's an appearance here. They might not be all the way to conflict of interest yet because we have not had the evidence that we need.
Okay, so let me ask you, is the appearance enough? You say there's an appearance. Maybe that's a subjective thing or not. Obviously, there's opposition. Is that threshold enough to get rid of a finance minister?
It has been enough in other provinces to cost politicians their jobs. The appearance is enough. And I think that's where we're at. I think that we're way past that line. I think, you know, the way question period works is when things go away, when things aren't real, the questions stop coming, the questions keep coming. And I think it's because of this appearance. And you know, when we see, you remember Paul Calandra and Dean Del Mastro would stand up and do the same thing over and over again. They do their talking points to try to defend the prime minister, and we're getting close to that situation now.
Last word. Is Bill Morneau becoming a political liability for your party?
Absolutely not, and we're very proud of the work that he does. He enjoys the confidence of the Prime Minister. There's been no facts, no case, and no credibility on the part of the Conservatives. Canadians will remember.
A fine already.
I got to leave it there. The argument continues. Marco Mendocino, Marilyn Glatow, Kennedy Stewart, I appreciate all of you joining us today. Coming up next, Justin Trudeau is in China. Will he launch formal free trade negotiations there this week? The Minister of International Trade, François-Philippe Champagne, joins us next. He's spearheading that relationship. Stay with CTV's Question Period. Well, with worries that Donald Trump will sabotage the NAFTA agreement, the Prime Minister is in China right now to open up a new trade front. But with real concerns about human rights abuses and espionage, will Justin Trudeau actually kickstart a free trade agreement with China? For more on this, I'm now joined by the Trade Minister, François-Philippe Champagne. Minister, welcome back to the program.
It's a pleasure for me to be back.
During this trip to China, will the government announce that you're officially launching free trade negotiations with China?
Well, what I can say now, Evan, is that I'm keen to strengthen our relationship with China on the trade side based on Canadian values. You know, we had consultation with Canadians, consultation with stakeholders. We had four set of exploratory discussions with the Chinese official. And this allowed us to bring better understanding about, you know, what are the Canadian values we'll be pushing forward. And the same thing, understanding where the Chinese are coming from. So what you're seeing in this trade mission next week is really making sure that we strengthen that relationship and really translate that in jobs for Canadians and prosperity for the long term.
Okay, you're talking a lot about values, but a lot of Canadians, and you heard this in your own consultations, don't like the values that China represents. They're concerned, for example, when business people like Canadian John Chang, who's been in a Chinese jail for 20 months over a customs dispute over his Canadian wine business, he has cancer, his daughter's worried about his life. Will you raise the issue, for example, of Mr. Chang with your Chinese counterparts over there?
Well, I can't say, Evan, I take that very personally because I raised the case of Mr. Chen every time I was in China. I personally talked to my counterpart there. I take this consular case very, very, very seriously. We raised that. We said this was unacceptable. The Chinese understand our position at the highest level.
But I think, Minister, that the broader question outside of that specific case is how do you do business with a country if, when there's a trade dispute over, say, customs, someone ends up in prison? What message does that send to Canadian businesses?
Well, what I can say, Evan, is that I always believe that engagement is the best way to bring forward our values, to make sure that principled trade, that rules are established, that are respected. And I think that's what you're saying. I think engagement, Canadians understand at home that the best way to make progress on these matters and others, whether it's things that are challenging in dealing with China, whether it's about intellectual property, state-owned enterprise, But I think people at home get it, that the best way to affect change is to engage with people, to agree on a set of rules, to make sure that these things can be addressed at the highest level.
So will your government try to put in the same provisions in any kind of deal with China that it's putting in with the United States over NAFTA, like gender, environment, working standards? Will we see those?
In the exploratory talk about a possible trade agreement, we made sure that the Chinese side would understand that Canada's trade agenda is a progressive one. They have to understand, and people understand around the world, it's not only in China, it's the same thing we did when we were in Vietnam with respect to the comprehensive and progressive trans-partnership agreement that we discussed just 2 weeks ago in Da Nang, is that people understand that Canada is at the forefront of the progressive agenda, making sure that our trade makes sense for people, that we have chapter on the environment, that we have chapter on labor, that we respect gender equality. That's what Canada stands for in the world. That's what we did in the trade agreement with Europe. That's what I say at the WTO. That's what I said in Vietnam. And that's what we're saying to all our partners in the Asia-Pacific region.
You know, for years, the former head of CSIS, Canada's spy agency, Dick Fadden, who will be on the program later, said that foreign powers are infiltrating Canadian policy circles, specifically pointing the finger at China. Do the Chinese use their companies to spy on Canada?
Well, what I can say is that, you know, national security, protecting Canadian interests, whether it's on the IP side, whether it's with state-owned enterprise, is top in our agenda. We want to make sure that we engage, but we want to make sure that we engage in a way that protects our national security. And I think Canadians who are watching us at home should understand that we will always make sure that whatever trade relationship we establish with anyone around the world is always done in a way that favors Canadian interests and that also protects our national security.
Mr. Champagne, how do you try to make a deal on trade with China when North Korea, which is essentially a Chinese client state, is threatening to destabilize the entire world with an intercontinental ballistic missile? What will you tell China to do vis-a-vis North Korea? And would you make any trade deal contingent upon them de-escalating the situation on the peninsula?
Well, what I can say, Evan, and I think people understand, is that the best way to address this issue is to have dialogue, to engage. And that's what the Canadian government has been proposing. That's what Prime Minister Trudeau is going. If you look at the past, you know, a proposition that you're staying home and somehow you have influence doesn't work. What works, and we've seen it time and time again, is when Canada is on the world stage, arguing for, you know, principal trade, for fair trade, arguing for progressive trade, arguing to make sure that we respect the environment and labor. That's what Canada is at best around the world. My view, and I think it's shared by many Canadians, is that you better engage in the world because that's when your voice is heard by anyone in the region and around the world.
So will the meeting of foreign affairs ministers on the North Korea situation that will happen here in Canada include China? Will you extend an invitation to them this week?
Well, I mean, we have officials which are coming. As you know, in the exploratory talks we had a number of Chinese officials that have been coming. I met with the Chinese ambassador this week to, you know, prepare the trip to make sure that they understood where we were coming from, what we were expecting. I spoke also with my counterpart in China, and I think I'm going to meet him on Monday. So, yes, we are engaging because that's the best way for me to make progress on all the issues you mentioned.
All right, I got to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us again, Minister.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Evan.
All right, coming up on Question Period, should Canada be worried by the latest missile launch by North Korea? We've just been talking about that. If the regime's new missile can hit the United States, is Canada in the line of fire? The former head of CSIS, Dick Fadden, and the former defense minister, Peter MacKay, are joining us on that. Stay with CTV's Question Period.
We call on all nations to cut off all ties with North Korea. In addition to fully implementing all UN sanctions, all countries should sever diplomatic relations with North Korea.
Well, nothing like worrying about a world war on a Sunday morning, but that is the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, condemning North Korea's latest and most disturbing missile launch, an intercontinental ballistic missile the North Korean regime claims is capable of reaching the United States. The problem is, of course, it could also hit Canada, whether by strategic targeting or by a mistake. Is it time for Canada to get more serious about missile defense? To find out about that and lots more, I'm joined now by Peter MacKay. He is, of course, the former defense minister under Stephen Harper, and by Dick Fadden, the former head of Canada's spy agency, CSIS, and the former national security advisor, both to Stephen Harper and Justin Trudeau. Gentlemen, good to see you. Good morning.
Good to be here.
Dick Fadden, I'm going to start with you, the new missile launch. Does Canada have to relook at how it defends itself against missiles?
I think it does. I think Canada has three major national security issues: cyber, terrorism, and missiles. The first two we're either dealing with or there's a plan to deal with them. Missile defense, we're not. And I would emphasize it's ballistic missile defense. There's no aggressivity on the part of Canada required, so I really don't understand why we as a country would not contribute to our own defense.
Well,
it's getting worse.
What advice would you give? You were the former national security advisor. After this launch from North Korea, has the danger level gone up? Would your advice change?
I think it would, because over the years, they've become better and better at getting these missiles towards North America. I think the pressure between the United States and Korea is more than it used to be. I think the threat is greater. I don't think we're going to have a world war tomorrow, but I do think the simple answer is Canada should tell the United States, we're concerned about this, we want to engage in talks on BMD, how can we participate?
So ballistic missile defense, Peter McKay, under, of course, Paul Martin, we didn't join, neither under Stephen Harper, we didn't join the United States program. Has the world changed? Do we need to basically join up?
Yes, I agree. And as I often have with Dick Fadden, I think that the dynamic has changed. The threat level has gone up, as has the rhetoric. And there's always the chance of a mistake, a misinterpretation of some of the provocation coming from both sides. And as you said in your intro, an intercontinental ballistic missile may very well come over Canada. That is to say, it could pass through our airspace. It could conceivably, as terrible as it sounds, come down in Canada. And so for that reason, we need to up our game. That, of course, involves greater time, resources, and effort at NORAD. And having a look at intercontinental ballistic missile defense is one thing. An early warning system, a more sophisticated, technologically advanced early warning system in our Arctic is as well an important part of our defense. So we need to be more engaged, more involved. I think those discussions are nascent and they're happening. But at NORAD, currently not having Canadians in the room or not being part of the final decision to take down a missile over our airspace is quite frankly ridiculous and dangerous.
All right. Well, you talk about North Korea, but it's related. They're essentially a client state of China. The Prime Minister's in China looking at a free trade deal or a possible trade deal. Dick Fadden, you in the past, when you were in your capacity at CSIS, warned that there's a lot of espionage that goes on. A lot of it cyber-related, related to China. What concerns do you have if the government says, look, we got to get in on the Chinese market, we need a free trade? What warning signs are there?
Well, let me start by saying I'm not sure we can say today that North Korea is entirely a client state of China. They have a lot of influence,
right,
but they can't be told what to do, and I think that's part of the problem today. China may or may not be willing to apply a lot of pressure, but even if they did, North Korea sees all of this in the context of their survival. So I don't think they're going to respond immediately. As concerns China, I think we have to deal with China. I've always said that. I think you agree. I think we have to go in with our eyes open. Everybody wants a free trade deal as if it's the panacea, you know, to all of our problems. We're going to become engaged with a country whose ultimate objectives in Canada we don't know. We don't know what our bottom line is with them. They will involve state-owned enterprises with no bottom line, whereas ours have a lot of bottom lines. We go in free trade negotiations with the objective of facilitating the private sector.
Right.
They're going in with the objective of facilitating the Chinese state meeting its objectives. Entirely different level of engagement.
Peter McKay, you guys had to deal with this when you were in government. What's your concern about maybe trying to kickstart a free trade deal with China?
Well, look, I think it's desirable, it's necessary. I also think the TPP is something we need to pursue vigorously. The prize there is, of course, Japan. But yes, absolutely, we need to engage with China. But I think we need to be very cautious. As Dick has laid out very articulately, they have different goals, different parameters. I dealt with Chinese ministers in several different departments, and they see the world entirely differently. Whether we were engaged on consular issues that involved human rights violations, whether we were talking about the way in which state-run enterprises were operating in their country compared to ours. Look, they want our energy, Evan. They want access to our market. And quite frankly, they're also looking at us as a means of triangulating into the United States. But back to your earlier question, they are heavily involved, heavily engaged in espionage. There isn't a day goes by that our Canadian government departments, our banking system, even our critical infrastructure are not in some way or another being probed and examined, if not hacked. And that has to be a major, major concern in this country. So it's not just rogue actors, as we alluded to in our earlier discussion around possible terrorist attacks or missile attacks. It's also the use of cyber and the use of very sophisticated means to penetrate our systems. And China is at the forefront in efforts to do just that. And so we need to have a very clear-eyed vision of what we want and what we're willing to trade and what we're willing to give up or be vulnerable when it comes to these discussions with China.
All right, I got to leave it there. Peter McKay, Dick Fadden, I really appreciate both of you guys joining me this morning. Coming up, let's turn to the biggest political fight in Canada, maybe pipelines and a surprising series of fights. Why is the biggest challenge facing an NDP premier, two other NDP leaders? The Premier of Alberta joins us next on Question Period. Stay with us. Well, the Premier of Alberta has been on a speaking tour across the country. She's trying to sell pipelines, specifically the expansion of the Trans Mountain Pipeline, which is set to run from Alberta to the Burnaby Port in British Columbia. Now, the pipeline, of course, was approved by the federal government, but it's being challenged by various Aboriginal groups and, of course, by the government of BC. Will this project ever get built? Let's find out. Premier of Alberta, Rachel Notley, joins us now from Vancouver. You know, it's kind of strange, Premier Notley, is that you're the NDP Premier of Alberta, but your toughest opponents are who? The NDP. The NDP Premier Horgan in British Columbia, the new federal NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh, he's against the pipeline. What does all this tell you about your own party and this issue?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, there are many, many things, many, many issues where I share the same opinions as the federal leader and John Horgan. There's no question about that. One thing that I also believe that maybe and where I'm putting a different priority on this than those two is I believe that as a new Democrat, you can't engage in any kind of major public policy initiative that forgets working people, that puts working people last, that is cavalier about the impact on people's ability to keep a roof over their head and put food on the table. And I think that view, frankly, is historic and traditionally a fundamentally important view and principle of the NDP. So there's obviously different interpretations.
I guess the question is, do you think the new federal NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh, is forgetting about the worker, forgetting about, frankly, the base of that party? Has he lost focus on the working class person?
Well, I absolutely think that it's not only about forgetting about the worker. What it is about actually coming up with a climate change plan, an environmental plan that is slated for success. Because you can't succeed if communities are put in jeopardy, if jobs are put in jeopardy, if economic success and prosperity is put in jeopardy. And it's not necessary to put those things in jeopardy to succeed on these other matters. And so what you need to do is sort of dig in. It's hard work. You've got to do your homework, but it can be done. And that's what we're doing in Alberta. And what I will say is that, again, the decision has been taken by the federal government. So the positions of the federal leader of the NDP and even, frankly, the premier of BC, but certainly the federal leader of the NDP, are not particularly relevant to this conversation. And I would say that going forward, I hope that other members of my party will remember that other really critical component of why we are New Democrats, which is making sure that regular working families are secure and have economic prosperity.
The truth is, Premier, that your political opponent in Alberta, Jason Kenney, says you haven't done nearly enough to fight for this pipeline. He's offered suggestions, tougher stances like sanctions against BC, refusing, for example, to implement the federal government's carbon tax. Will you play hardball and consider those options?
Well, I think that some of the suggestions that have come from Mr. Kenney are starting to look a lot like the suggestions that come from President Trump south of the border, quite honestly. He's approaching and recommending a very isolationist view of how Alberta should engage with the rest of the country. You know, I honestly
Wouldn't be surprised if he's essentially saying that what we should do is build a wall around Alberta. I wouldn't be surprised if tomorrow he comes out demanding that BC pays for it, and then the next day he'll come out and wonder why it is that we can't get the pipeline built. That kind of approach is the absolute wrong way to build a nation, and I don't think, frankly, that any Canadians and Albertans are going to ultimately embrace it. And it's not helpful, and it's not practical. And I think that we're going to have a bit more progress in the approach that we're taking.
No, but Premier, his point is that he doesn't want to build a wall. He actually wants to build a pipeline. And all the talk clearly isn't getting a pipeline built.
But he's not going to. His point, with the greatest of respect, Evan, you know, he's just not going to build a pipeline by crossing his arms, sticking out his lower lip, pouting, and then somehow suggesting that the answer to it is to ask Kinder Morgan to actually stop shipping what they're already shipping in order to get this done. I mean, none of this makes sense. It is rhetorical. It's not logical. It doesn't make sense. And that's exactly the same kind of strategy that we see south of the border. And that's not helpful to thoughtful conversations, the kind that we need to be able to always have in Canada to continue to be the nation who we are and have the potential to be.
Okay, well, we'll see if the pipeline does get built with your strategy or with another one. Let's just move on to pot real quick, because the federal government wants to split an excise tax, that's a tax on the manufacture of marijuana, 50-50 with the provinces. Is Alberta into that, or do you want more money?
Well, we've been very clear.